Researchers create the next human eye, or did they? And more coming up on today's episode of the Latest in Tech News. Hey, Gadget here. You're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is the Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss out on the news. We do this on the daily around here, and we would hate for you guys to miss out, seeing as how most of you just tune in for the simple title of the show. You might be surprised to know that's not the only thing we talk about. We cover like 6 other articles, sometimes, well, rarely more, sometimes less, but usually about like 6 to 7 articles we cover from tech, gadgets, and gaming news. So if you think you missed out on something, you probably didn't. You probably just didn't listen to the full show. So speaking of feature stories, today we'll be taking a look at researchers creating an electronic lens that works better than the human eye. Will that be the next human eye? Bionics? Will we have to worry about Terminator? I don't know. All these questions and more will be answered coming up. But before we do, beware, using Google Assistant, Alexa, or Siri to call businesses could connect you to scammers. Instead, seems like those scammers have figured out a way into voice assistants. We'll also be taking a look at the third-gen Chromecast could very well be Stadia's secret weapon. In gadget news, we'll be taking a look at Dell announcing over a dozen Inspiron PCs, laptops, 2-in-1s, and all-in-1s. But not to be outdone, MSI came out with a bunch of content creator laptops that we'll be taking a look at too. So for those of you who like MSI, who like content creator themed laptops, we'll be getting into more of that. The secret weapon there is the Intel's 10th gen chips. And for gaming news, we'll be taking a look at Mount and Blade 2. Bannerlord has an early access release date, and Kingdom Under Fire 2 coming this November. But before we do, we have to take a look at what happened today in tech history. All right, today is August 21st, 2019. On this day in history, in 1993, NASA loses contact with the Mars Observer spacecraft 3 days before it was to enter into orbit around Mars. The reason for the loss of contact was never definitively determined, but the most probable cause was a rupture of a fuel tank. If only we could just have Kirk fly by on Enterprise and find out, hey, could you tell us what happened with the Mars Observer? It'd be great. To which he'd probably say, yeah, a fuel tank blew up and that's why you lost contact with a genius. Also, on this day in history, in 1888, William S. Burroughs receives a patent for his calculating machine, and within a year had produced 50 such machines. They proved to be difficult to use, but he soon improved on them and went on to become a force in the developing calculator industry. And the rough draft of this patent looks very similar to the calculator that we see of today's, except the one goofy part of it is the way it was designed. It had this huge row of like buttons, at least they're broken up into 9 rows and I think 9 columns, and each row was 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 all the way up to 9, and each column was obviously 1 to 9 in the correct order. It just got confusing, so obviously improved on it, and yeah, calculators, pretty darn smart, weren't they? Well, you probably don't even use them anymore. You probably use whatever's on your phone. And it shows how important calculators have become. Technology has moved so far past, it's progressed, that calculators have become obsolete. Well, might as well start collecting them now. You might never know when they might become valuable once again. All right, our feature story for today is researchers are, well, just created an electronic lens that works better than the human eye. This is actually quite impressive in terms of the tech involved here. A new breakthrough could soon revolutionize the design of almost every optical instrument in use today, including cameras, eyeglasses, and telescopes. Combining recent developments in artificial muscle and flat lens technologies, a team of researchers at the Harvard John A. Paulson School of Engineering and Applied Sciences, CES for short, have created a new lens that functions a lot like the human eye. Not only is the instrument capable of focusing in real time thanks to an elastomer muscle, it features none of the bulk of a traditional spherical lens. It can even do some things the human eye can't, including adjusting for astigmatism and image shift, two variables that lead to blurry vision. Now, all of this is thanks to an earlier technology a team, some of the same researchers, developed. The flat lens design this new artificial eye takes advantage of is called a metalens. It uses tiny nanostructures to focus light. In this way, it is able to focus the entire visible light spectrum at a single point. By contrast, traditional lenses use multiple elements to achieve the same feat, which is why they're kind of bulky. Prior to this latest breakthrough, the SEES team says they were only able to manufacture metal lenses that were the size of a piece of glitter. By contrast, their latest invention is larger than approximately 1 centimeter in diameter. Bigger, in this case, is better because it makes more feasible to use the technology in a host of modern applications. With cameras, for instance, a lens needs to be big enough to cover a sensor, so that there's no obvious problems going on there. Now, as with any new technology, it'll likely be years before metal lenses make their way to consumer gadgets. Keep in mind, you heard it here, folks, metal lenses. However, their potential is unmistakable. Combined with even smaller computer chips, something like virtual and augmented reality headsets could become small and comfortable enough where the technology becomes appealing to the average consumer. And I love talking about these kind of articles and covering this kind of stuff because it's, I think, breakthrough discovery, unraveling a new technology, improving upon, you know, something we have existing and making it bigger, better, faster, smarter, stronger, you know, everything that is supposed to happen with technology. I mean, we were just talking about calculators like 3 minutes ago, so I'm quite impressed with everything that they've done so far. I mean, and here's the image on the screen for you guys in case you're looking. Wow. Quite impressive. It's probably going to help a lot. I'm wondering if the technology is first going to make its way to contact lenses, and then they're probably going to try and patent it and try and make it like exclusive. They say, hey, you can't use this for other applications for technology, and then we're going to have more drama problems going on there. Hopefully not. Hopefully it's just like, no, we created something, we own it, and if you want to use it, and 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 all of you run in different industries, but you all complement each other in some way, shape, or form, or, you know, aren't directly competing each other like with each other, like a contact lens company and a VR AR game developer company who makes the, you know, the gear that you wear. Don't really see how that's competing much. You're not even the same industry field, whatever. I'm talking too much. Let me know what you guys think in the comments down below. Oh man, this is cool. I like covering this kind of technology. One of the reasons why I cover this show, the latest in tech news. All right, moving on to some more news. Beware, using the Google Assistant, Alexa, or Siri to call businesses could connect you to scammers instead. Sure enough, voice assistant make our lives easier for the most part. Instead of having to get up to turn on the lights, we can simply ask them to do it for us. Similarly, Google Assistant and Amazon Alexa allow you to call businesses via voice. No need to input a phone number anywhere. Now, keep in mind there are risks associated with blindly calling unknown numbers, though. According to the Better Business Bureau, some scammers have apparently gamed Google and Amazon's phone number ranking systems. Unsuspecting users could end up talking to an imposter instead of the desired business. The BBB reports that consumers reached out to it after almost falling for some scammers who try to charge them nonsense fees. One victim used some sort of voice search to call an airline in hope of changing her seat. A con artist then tried to make her pay $400 in prepaid gift cards. This reminds me of the YouTube videos that I like watching on occasion, and streamers on Twitch who obviously just do this full time. It's actually quite hilarious. They'll call people up. I know, it's an entire... There's an entire subcategory of streamers on Twitch that all they do is they prank call the scammers back, or they deal with scammers. Anyways, I've heard this line over and over again. But luckily, the victim here did not fall for the trick. Another customer used Siri to contact support for his printer, only to find himself connected to yet another scammer. Thus far, we haven't heard of any successful scams, but with Google Assistant and others becoming more ubiquitous every day, Surely only a matter of time. The Better Business Bureau recommends looking up phone numbers on official websites for now instead of trusting assistants to call the correct company. Hopefully Amazon, Google, and Apple are working on a system of trusted numbers or other means for reliable verification. Although if the business is smart and savvy enough, they should have a listing on Google well enough with an updated phone number, and they know it works because people have called it and they verified it and everything's working. So if that's all in place, we really don't have to worry about much, but just double check that the number that you are calling is the number that you want to call and not just blindly calling it. It pays to do your homework, as it were. Ugh, something's on my head. I think it was a hair. I don't know. You ever feel like that one of these days? You know, like a hair is going to fall down and like knock you out cold. Like if you could imagine a piece of hair falling from the top of the Eiffel Tower and nailing you in the head and knocking you out cold, it's possible. I have heard tales of, well, I'm not going to mention it here because I don't want to get in trouble for anything that I happen to say. I just have interest in a good source that stranger things have happened, like being struck by lightning twice. Heyo. Anyways, third-gen Chromecast could be Stadia's secret weapon in plain sight. We might not even know. By the way, if you guys are interested in any of the articles that we covered on today's show, head on over to technewsgadget.net, and there you can click on any of the articles mentioned and read the article for yourself, check out the pictures, check out any associated videos, and have fun. Or if you're listening via the podcast, that option is made available to you right in the description, or however you get more information about the podcast episode. Now, news surrounding Google Stadia game streaming platform is in full force, with the latest Stadia Connect having recently aired and Google's strong presence at Gamescom happening this week. We're expecting to see more real-world hands-on coverage from the show in Germany, but what we've seen so far is that Stadia is legit. The game library is growing to a solid and substantial place for launch, and the flexibility will likely end up appealing to all more casual players out there. Even with Stadia's massive appeal and extended flexibility, you can play on a phone, laptop, tablets, and the Chromecast Ultra. The author here, at least, is betting that we'll see even further expansion early in 2020 with support for the third-gen Chromecast that is actually the newest Chromecast device on the market. Now, if you remember, the third-gen Chromecast was only released back in October of 2018, not even a full year ago yet. Kind of showed up out of nowhere and weren't really fully aware of what its purpose was, but at least the author here in this article speculated back in May of last year that this new Chromecast could end up being for Google's not yet announced gaming service known back then as Project Yeti. While we are talking about the third gen Chromecast in that post, the rest of the article accurately predicted most of what has come to pass with Stadia up until this point. Now that the Stadia has been announced, shown, and is officially coming to Chromecast Ultra in November, no one has revisited the idea of the third gen Chromecast supporting the service, but the author here would place a massive wager on the fact that the third-gen Chromecast is part of the broader plan, though. First, let's take a look at what's different in the third-gen device when compared with the second-gen. Well, this is short and simple, albeit Bluetooth. That is literally all that is different between the second and third-gen. To be clear, this is the same Bluetooth LE spec that is in the Chromecast Ultra and is meant for things like pairing devices and simple low-energy communications. Other than that addition, the second and third-gen Chromecast are literally identical from an internal perspective. Second, let's take a look at one comment in particular from the Reddit AMA that was held with the director of product for Stadia. This answer was in response to a question about broader Chromecast support. And it says, quote, "We're starting with Chromecast Ultra because, well, we had to start somewhere and it supports the full 4K Stadia experience in all its glory. We're going to add more options for all of our TV gamers," end quote. No, this isn't a 100% confirmation of the third-gen Chromecast getting Stadia support, but it was an opportunity for him to state that if there is some special hardware in the Ultra that isn't present in any other Chromecast, it might be necessary for Stadia gameplay. He did not. Instead, he left the door wide open. So with this open door, we go back to the first point that the only thing added to the newest Chromecast was Bluetooth. It became glaringly obvious what is going to happen. Stadia launches in November for paying customers only. Paying customers pay for Stadia Pro, and that service promises 4K 60 FPS gaming. This would necessitate a Chromecast that can handle 4K, and the Ultra is clearly the only one capable of that. In February, however, Stadia Base will roll out and is free to use. Users simply pay for their games. This free version only supports up to 1080p, and wouldn't you know it, that just happens to be the exact same resolution as the third-gen Chromecast. Writing is on the wall. Stadia Base will be playable on a Chromecast Gen 3 when it rolls out. It'll be a cheaper setup for many, and swarms of players could be very well jumping on board with the setup. So, between that and the Chromebooks or phones, I'd have a wide variety of options to game from here. But, yeah, the article goes on to explain a little bit more. But, yeah, what do you guys think? Right? Wrong? Something else entirely? Did a fly fly into the camera lens when I wasn't looking? Let me know down in the comments. I read all the comments. I reply to every comment. So don't worry if you commented. I don't miss a thing. For those of you wondering, yeah, I guarantee you I can write a comment. He's not going to see it. Yeah, I'm going to see it. I can read the screen. I know what's going on. All right, moving on to some gadget news. Dell announces over a dozen Inspiron PCs, including laptops, two-in-ones, and all-in-ones. Now, this post has images that go along with it. So if you're listening to the podcast audio only version of it, you're totally missing out. You should head on over to youtube.com/tech news gadget. Now, oh man, did you see that image? That laptop? You look at that. Well, you just look at it. I'm not even going to get into Ed Bassmaster. Anyways, Dell announced several new Inspiron PCs. The lineup of new devices includes a 13-inch laptop, a 14-inch 2-in-1, and a 27-inch all-in-1 desktop. In total, over a dozen Inspiron devices will be available in the near future if you count different sizes of the same device separately. Some PCs are available as early as this week, though some users will have to wait until as late as December for some devices depending on the market you might be in. Several of the announced PCs run Intel's new Comet Lake processors. First off, the Inspiron 14-7000 is a thin laptop that weighs only 1.095 kilograms. Hopefully I pronounced that right. Can you just do pounds, please? Thank you. The laptop uses Windows Connected Standby and a new lid open sensor to ensure that the device turns on quickly. It features an FHD display with 100% sRGB color accuracy. The display has three thin bezels, so a larger screen can fit into a more compact laptop body. It supports Dell Mobile Connect and has a Thunderbolt USB-C port to help users connect to devices. It runs on up to a 10th gen Intel Core i5 processor and has an option for an NVIDIA GeForce MX250 GPU. The Inspiron 14-7000 will be available in North America starting October 1st at a starting price of $930. Moving on to the Inspiron 14-15-5000 2-in-1 laptop. This one is a convertible machine that can be used like a classic clamshell laptop or flipped around into tent or tablet modes. It supports a Dell Active Pen as well as Dell Mobile Connect, which allows you to connect your phone to your PC. In terms of processor, runs the 10th gen Intel Core, available with up to 64 gigs of DDR4 memory. The 14-inch model has an option to include an NVIDIA GeForce MX250 GPU. Ports are a USB-C, two USB 3.1 Gen 1 ports, one USB 2.0 port, a full HDMI port, and a full SD card reader. The Inspiron 5000 2-in-1 laptops are available starting October 1st in North America at $580. Now, the Inspiron 27-7000 all-in-1 is the largest Inspiron device announced this week. Here are the details on that. It runs on up to a 10th gen Intel Core i7 processor and has up to 32 gigs of DDR4 memory. There's an option for an NVIDIA MX110 GPU for some extra graphical power. It has a wide range of ports, including a USB 3.1 Gen 2 type CTM port, three USB 3.1 Gen 1 ports, one USB 2.0 type A port, a 3-in-1 SD card reader, and a headset jack. It also has HDMI out, audio out, and an HDMI in port that can be used for game consoles. The all-in-one desktop is available from August 23rd and starts at $1,000. And, they got images that go along with it, as well as links directly to it, in case you're interested in more information. But not to be outdone here, MSI They said, we're coming out with a laptop line. These, we're going to call them the content creator laptops. And yes, we got images that go along with these as well. But if you're on the go and you're like, hey, I'm on the go. Can I listen to like your podcast or something? Yeah. Head on over to latestintechnews.com or search in any podcast player that you currently have. Right now we're on Apple, Spotify, Google. Type in latest in tech news, hit the subscribe button, and you should be good to go. And by should, I mean make sure you double clicked on the subscribe button so that you don't miss out on the latest news. Now, the PC making business has slowly been shifting its attention from gamers to content creators. For example, Acer launched the Concept D line of computers in April, and I believe we covered those, specifically targeted at those who want a powerful PC without the bulk or aesthetics that go along with such rigs. Gaming company MSI also wants in, launching a slew of laptops today designed for creative professionals, namely the Modern 14, Prestige 14, and Prestige 15. These are also the first laptops to use Intel's latest 10th Gen 6 core CPU that the chipmaker announced today. Now, MSI, for those of you who don't know, is typically known for its gaming systems, but the company has been working on a line of notebooks for content creators for a while now. It started with last year's Prestige PS42, which is a light, stylish 14-inch laptop packing Intel's Core i7 and NVIDIA's MX150 graphics card. The laptops announced today expand the existing lineup of devices MSI positions as its content creator series. On the high end of the portfolio sits the Creator Notebooks, you might have mentioned earlier in the post, while the Prestige and Modern machines announced today make up the mid-range and entry level, respectively. And, there are photos that go along with it. Oh, nice. Let me look at these. Really nice, spiffy laptop design here. If you up it, you get nice. Okay, stop looking at the pictures. See, I told you guys exactly what was going to happen. We're going to look at all the pictures, and that's all we're going to want to look at. The new laptops pack powerful guts, but also colorful, accurate screens to cater to creators' workflows. MSI made what it's calling the true pixel displays that render 100% of the Adobe RGB wide color gamut and have a Delta E color accuracy rating of less than 2. Obviously, the closer to 0, the better. The True pixel panels also run at 4K UHD and support HDR, though MSI hasn't said which standard of dynamic range it's complying with yet. The company also doesn't have displays ready yet, though, so for the author who actually went to the recent demo in New York, didn't see them, the units that they did see had full HD displays instead, which looked as colorful as most laptops that have been tested out so far. New Prestige 14 and 15 are expected. 14 and 15 inch laptops that can be figured with up to NVIDIA's GeForce GTX 1650 graphics card, as well as Intel's 10th Gen 6 core CPUs. So, let's see, typing on them is more ergonomically friendly thanks to the slight tilt provided by the hinge, which propped up the back of the keyboard. Both models offer a generous selection of ports, including two USB-C with Thunderbolt, two USB-A, and a micro SD card reader. If you want HDMI 2, you'll have to get the larger model, but, there's another one. Meanwhile, the Modern 14 at MSI's demo looked pretty much identical to the PS42 from last year. Same silver frame, blocky Space Invader-esque front on the keyboard, as well as a dotted grille above the function row for ventilation. Obviously, the only downside about this one is the disappointing webcam position below the screen. You'll have to wait until next year's Modern laptops arrive for that to change. Outside of that, an MSI rep told the author that models with updated keyboard font as well as a 15-inch Modern should be available in the coming months. In terms of pricing here, what's compelling about the Modern 14 addition to its good-looking exterior is its price. The Modern 14 will start at $749 with an Intel Core i5, Intel's UMA graphics, 8 gigs of RAM, and 512 gigs of storage. You can get it if you want the graphics card. You can bump it up to NVIDIA's MX250 GPU for $900. In terms of the Prestige, the 14 and 15 start at $1,400. They have Intel's Core i7 chipset and NVIDIA's Max Q GTX 1650 cards. You can pre-order the three new laptops today, and the Prestige 14 and 15 will start shipping at the end of August, while the Modern will be available next month. Alright, let's get on over here to some gaming news. And apparently this screen doesn't want to load with me. Okay, so we're going to have to do this. Mount and Blade 2 Bannerlord. Looking at this game, this is quite impressive. For as long as anyone can remember, Mount and Blade 2 Bannerlord has been a thing of legend. Old men whispered it that it still lived, while the young people scoffed at them. It's become the stuff of games writing memes, because every time you release a story about Bannerlord, the only comments are along the lines of, "Release date when?" Well, developer Tail Worlds has finally committed to a launch date of sorts. Mount and Blade 2 Bannerlord will enter Steam's early access program in March 2020. Frazier was fairly shocked reporting news of the closed beta earlier this year, so the author here can only echo those feelings when you type the following words. You'll be able to play Mount and Blade 2 Bannerlord in less than one Gregorian calendar year. The hype for a new Mount and Blade game is probably fairly confusing for anyone who hasn't experienced the singular joy of leading a raiding party in Warband. The basic idea behind Mount and Blade is that you play as a single character, a leader, who builds up an army by gradually gaining notoriety and wealth, carving out each step of your path in battle alongside your comrades. It's a heady power fantasy, but it's been nearly 10 years since the last new game came out. But as if you're still not excited after that, well, they do have a trailer that goes along with it, but I won't be playing it. But yeah, let's just say barded horses charging through the forest, trebuchets letting loose at castle walls, pikemen forming up in desert formation, sandstorm. Oh man, it's basically like Total War, except you're actually there, on the battlefield, doling out bread to your soldiers and barking commands from horseback. Anyways, yes, folks, are pretty amped up about this game, and after many long years, we now have an actual time frame to mark on our calendars. Next Gregorian calendar, we ride. For me, I actually never heard of this game, not even a decade ago. I went, what? So I actually had to go take a look. This is quite an impressive game. If you guys want a variety from the style of, yeah, I can command legions of armies to go into battle for me. But what if, I think that was the design, at least from the company creating the game. They said, what if I go and say, no, I want to be the character on the battlefield, looking at my troops and barking commands out to them. And what if we did a game like that? That's essentially what this game is. Oh, no, what's going on with this one? Oh, jeez. PC gamer, you guys need to figure out what you're doing with your website. I can't load the articles. I want to cover the articles that you guys have on your website, but then you cause problems for me, and the problem is stupid. Okay, last article we got for you guys today. Kingdom Under Fire 2 is coming this November. Also, this game, I wanted to cover this, is a decade-delayed MMO that is available for pre-order starting today. GameForge announced in July that after a decade of waiting, the MMO arts Kingdom Under Fire 2 would finally be coming to North America. Doubts would be understandable. It was supposed to arrive in 2009, after all. But today, the publisher kicked off pre-orders and dropped a new trailer, committing to a November release. Kingdom Under Fire 2 features three factions: the Human Alliance, Dark Legion, and Angkblossians, I guess, vying for control over the realm of Berzia. Players can choose from a range of different classes and can focus on their individual characters in traditional MMO-style combat or opt to command large armies as war strategists instead. No, don't play the video. GameForge primarily releases free-to-play games, but Kingdom Under Fire 2 will be released as a premium-priced game in North America. So, a hard release date hasn't been set, but just the confirmation that it's actually happening has to be good news to anyone who spent the past decade waiting for KOF 2, which is known for short. The game is available for pre-order in three different packages costing $30, $50, or $100, with different costumes, boosters, and other benefits in detail. Full details, I guess, are at GameForge.com, Kingdom Under Fire 2. So, you guys looking forward to this game? Definitely sounds exciting. This is actually, I covered this, so I'm actually going to have to take a look more in depth and see, is this a game that I could see myself playing? Because if it could, I mean, I looking at it initially, I definitely think I could probably pull it off playing it, but I'd have to search around a little bit more and maybe join a community or two and talk a little bit before I actually know what I'm talking about. But I wanted to bring this to your attention because it's interesting news. Nonetheless, after decades-long awaitment, well, we finally got two games coming out. Whoopee! And if you couldn't tell already, I'm actually getting kind of tired. I'm sitting here wondering, why am I doing a show so late? It's a long day. But anyways, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. I had to make an episode for you guys. I couldn't just say, no, I don't want to do an episode today because I feel tired. There was a lot of information I had to cover. So now that we've covered it, that covers it. Yes. So new episodes released every weekday, except this coming Friday. I'm not sure. There may or may not be an episode release. I do have something going on Friday. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button and by leaving a comment if you're watching today's episode via YouTube. If you're listening via the podcast, head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review or leave us a review in the app you're currently listening in. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. And be sure to ring those bells. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick. And remember, for latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.